You're listening to the Live Out Loud podcast with River Wynn and Michelle Flamer.
Hi, River.
Good morning, Michelle.
How are you doing?
I am good. I'm very excited about today's episode.
Yeah, buckle up, Buttercup, because we're going to go deep into some interesting, relevant topics. I think that the pod is ready, sort of an intermediate deep dive today. I think we've done a lot of the general stuff already. And I think bringing in these guests that can elevate this conversation to hopefully broaden and expand. And yeah. I'll use your term that you love so much, seeing things through a new lens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'd love to welcome Julia Hoffman. You're a therapist, but what is the actual title?
Yeah, I'm a counselor. So I have my master's in marriage and family therapy.
Love it.
And I am, I'm not licensed in the state of Texas. I just like to say that for all the licensed people, but that means I can work with people all over the country because I'm not hindered by that. And I have some feelings about Texas. I'll just start with that.
Yeah, we can definitely. I was born in Texas in Wichita Falls. I haven't told you that yet, but born.
Oh, yeah, no, you haven't.
On Shepherd's Air Force Base, and but only spent a few years there before my dad picked up my mom and my brother and I, and we all moved to California. But okay, so I would love for you, in your words, to tell the pod a little bit about who you are. And just a beautiful intro to maybe what you thought your coaching, your practice mm-hmm. would look like mm-hmm. and kind of where it's evolved to. I think that'll help the conversation.
Yeah. Good questions. So my master's in marriage and family therapy, and I just finished Martha Beck's coaching program, which was really
I saw that in your, incredible. I'm like, I love Martha Beck. She's freaking badass.
Love her. I feel like I grew up with her because I feel like I grew up with Oprah. So both of them.
She almost makes me want to be in a throuple, almost, but not really.
Almost. So close. It definitely makes me want to be a fly on the wall. I mean, yes. It's just so fascinating how
the
she
dynamics. Talks about it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, check out Martha Beck. She's incredible. But, and I'm a mother of four daughters. So I have my bonus girl who I adopted is 20, my wife's daughter, bio daughter, and then 14, 10 and a half and six. So we have four girls and four dogs and we are raising them with their dad and technically my ex, but I never call him my ex. So I'll just say their dad and his wife. So they're bonus mom.
Are they close by?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. 10 minutes away. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. That was, all those factors that you have to decide. And so I came, let's see, my evolution into what I've done started when my life fell apart, I suppose. So in 2019, well, it didn't fall apart. It just really, there was a real different lens.
You blew it up.
Yeah. It was a completely
direction.
Yeah. Completely different pair of glasses, telescope, whatever. It was very different.
Binoculars.
Yeah.
Microscope.
So I'd been really unhappy for a long time. And I had done a lot of work because of, when you're in this world, there's anytime you talk to someone, I feel like it's always doing a piece of work. Well, I've done like 20 years of work and I couldn't figure it out. So, and my mom had died very suddenly. So it was shocking. And then 3 months later, I decided I was going to, my last ditch effort to get happy was to stop drinking. So because I'm an alcoholic for sure, but it was when I first admitted it. So I went to my first meeting. And I met my wife at my second meeting. So we, recommend this.
No, that's what I was going to say. When in alcohol, like in Alcoholics Anonymous, from what I understand, like they, this, your sponsors tell you like not to get involved emotionally with anybody for like a year.
That's like the first year, right?
Michelle, that's, and it's incredible advice. It's very good advice. I had to go through three sponsors to get to my fourth one that would actually, you know, stick with me. So thank you,
I'm
Aaron.
Sorry for laughing.
I love you, Aaron.
That's true.
Uh-huh. Mm. But, you know, it was what it was. And I had never, I had been with my husband then, well, we were together 15 years when the divorce was final. So a long time since I was 24. And all I'll say is a lifetime of clues that never, ever hit. It never hit that I was gay at all. Mm-hmm. A lifetime of clues and, oh my God, that makes so much sense. And oh, that make, this is clear now, happened in like a moment. Mm-hmm. It was like, I was gay. I mean, I was straight. And then the next day I was gay. I mean, was that clear?
Yeah, I had a similar thing happen when my dad passed away suddenly in 2020.
Okay.
He was like one of my best friends. Mm-hmm. And I felt my DNA change within my body. And at that mm-hmm. moment, he was, and he and my stepmom have been, were married for 40 some, just for, just probably shy of 40 years. Mm. And they were still hot for each other, Julia. Like it was, so in my, in that moment and those few days after of deep grief, I looked around at my life and I realized I needed to get a divorce from my ex-wife, from my now ex-wife. You know, mm-hmm. we were together 18 years. Mm-hmm. And I, and it just, I just saw everything so different in that moment when losing a parent so suddenly, especially one that you have a true relationship with. It's not like it's a distant thing and you're just like, oh yeah, okay. No, it was like profound DNA shift.
In a what way? Like, cause you had such a close relationship with him in a, you felt like you were opened. You felt like you.
Yeah. In that moment, I kind of felt like, I realized I wasn't living my life like he did in that sense of like having this deep, profound relationship and love with my stepmom, who he's modeled beautifully for 40 years, mm-hmm. where literally at his 70th birthday, he's looking across the room and he's going, you know, we're just talking and he gets a glimpse of Mary Jean and he just goes, God, my wife is hot. Like, you know, and it's like, in that moment, I just thought, I know he literally was the sweetest that way. And I just thought to myself, I want to live my life through his eyes in that way. Yeah. Like, yeah. I want to live that kind of life. And mm-hmm. I just thought, what am I doing? It just made me realize like, I just put a deep lens on the circumstances of my, on my partner at that moment. And I just knew that it was going to take a little bit of time, but mm-hmm. I really knew that I needed to finally step away to give us both a chance at happiness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it happens, when it happens, like people passing away, it you're ready when you're ready. Definitely that, that, timelines that we think are the timelines that are going to be are not. My timelines have been, my timelines were fine, were exactly what I thought from going to high school until 39 and figuring this out. I just did what I was supposed to do. And then I knew that I was on the right track because it was so horrific. It felt so bad. It felt so bad, but I was so clear. So, I'll just say briefly, I did not have a good relationship with my mom. I have a much better relationship now that she's dead. She was incredibly mentally ill, in and out of psychiatric hospitals and addiction. And it was an incredibly challenging relationship. So almost the opposite for me, it felt like I was freed. Like I was kind of freed and I could have a relationship with her where I could appreciate what I had instead of just be really resentful. So that was a good thing. So she died in August. And then 6 months before that, I had my final, my last baby. And then 2 months before that, we moved from Seattle to Dallas and didn't, my then husband's job. He's a football coach, a high school football coach. So we moved from like totally different culture, no family. I'm 6 months
very pregnant. Very different places.
It was an adventure. And I was excited about it at the time because I needed something to change. So I was really excited about the time. But then all of these things happen in succession. And I realized I was in love with her. And 16 days later, I told him mm-hmm. that I said I was in love with her. I didn't say I'm gay, because to me, it wasn't about that. Mm-hmm. I didn't want being gay to be like some kind of excuse. I fell in love,
and it could have been a guy. I mean, it wasn't going to be because of where you were in your, but I'm saying there are women that are going through that same exact thing, straight women, mm-hmm. and they just mm-hmm. happen to fall in love with a soul, another man. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so it really isn't a, gender specific. It's just, you got to go with what you go with. And
yeah. When you fall in love with someone and it's right and feels real, I finally was myself. It all came together. Okay. But it was an incredibly painful time. She was going through a separation from her wife. In that 16 days, had a physical connection with her. So technically I cheated, and I hadn't in any of the 15 years at all remotely before that. And I'm Catholic and had 16 years of Catholic school. So that choice that I would have made again, I said, I think I should probably, before I tell my husband I'm in love with a woman, know what it's like to kiss a woman. It just felt important to me at the time. But I caused a lot of hurt. So in these choices we make, like, it was the right choice for me, but I caused a lot of hurt and upheaval in my world and my friends, my family. So that was the that was sort of that time. And then took about a year to get into like the flow of co-parenting. And in that year I started working with women coming out later in life. So I created Bloomer Society, and at one point had 1,000 women in the group. And two couples get married and that met there, and had a big party at our house where I met 60 of them in person. And it was a really special time. Mm-hmm. So out of that, the people that I was working with that I really, really connected to and felt the most, most connection, most helpful were the parents. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of dads contact me. Their wife, their husbands, their wife had just told them that she was coming out, and the pain was so, like, I can just feel it. I don't know. I'm not saying it's different from heterosexual, not coming out, people divorcing, but such a deep pain, especially for men, because you could see it. They want to be supportive. Like, they do not, can I swear? I don't know.
Yeah, totally. Okay.
They don't want to be an asshole. Like, yeah. But it's painful. And so that dynamic of how to support both people going through it, it continued to feel really important. I continued to work with people. And so that's my focus now, because it's really my focus in my own life too. Mm. So long, 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 long story, medium long.
I think speaking to that pain point you just mentioned, you know, as a woman who's come out of a divorce, you know, with a man, not because I came out. I mean, I came out very early in our relationship, and that was something mm-hmm. he was aware of for a long time. But I will say that my observation to that has been, like, most of the time when heterosexual people are divorcing, they're divorcing because they've gotten to a point where it's become really toxic, or one of them just cannot stay in the marriage anymore. And it doesn't have anything to do with, like, most of the time they're not in love anymore still. And I feel like when people are divorcing because one of or the other has come out, there's still a love there sometimes, and still like the hopes and the dreams for the relationship. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge grieving in the loss of that. So I can totally see that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like the friendship, like, well, I've been having a lot of thoughts about friendship. He and I are not friends. I don't call, I mean, I think we have the most incredible relationship, parenting relationship. And, I have an incredible relationship with his wife. I love his wife. The four of us parent together. But I don't call him my friend. Mm. It's a pretty solid line, and I try not to cross it, both for my wife and for his wife. And that's not, I don't mean cross the line like anything.
We get it.
Inappropriate, but like, even just connecting in some way about, like, you know, something from the past, or something that they don't know about, that something where we just share it, unless it's about the kids and a memory about the kids, and the kids are there, and then everybody, you know, then it's kind of a beautiful thing because it's for the kids. But it's hard for those outside people to come in and be kind of new to the family. Yeah, but I think I skipped ahead. But River, I was listening to yours, and so I have a different, you know, I have a different experience, because I really do. I'm doing this work. I'm very proud of how my family has come through this, and how my, you know, our children are doing. And I was so, I really feel for people that want a good relationship and don't have it.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, curious about that with you. Like, what is that like to say that out loud, I guess?
Yeah, it's hard because, so for me in my situation, when I met the parent of my kids, he already had a daughter, and I became a step very quickly in our relationship. Mm-hmm. Within weeks, I was taking care of her. And so I got to observe early in our relationship what his co-parenting skills were like with the other parent. And my stepdaughter's mom and I actually became very good co-parents. And her and I were the ones who communicated most of the time, because we were doing most of the parenting. And to this day, we are still friends. Post-divorce, she and I still talk. We hang out. She came to our wedding. She came to, like, off after our babies were born, she was there and she was involved. Like, we had a solid co-parenting relationship, her and I. But I got to observe over time the way that he wasn't able to show up in that relationship with her, and I was filling the gaps. And so one of the hesitations for me in getting divorced, the reason it took me so long, was because I knew what to expect out of co-parenting with him. And I didn't want my kids to experience that. And because really it was, there's a severe lack of ability to put the kids first and to communicate about things from the lens of looking at our children and their needs. I'm able to do that. But with him, it's very much a have to protect my reputation, have to protect my ego. I want people to think I'm a great dad, but I'm not willing to meet you in the space of actually talking about what's best for our kids, what their needs are, to be on the same page with parenting. So we parallel parent. And it's very much a, he does his parenting on his time. We don't talk about the kids being on the same page. Like, our kids have totally different sets of expectations at both homes. They're not on the same kind of routines, kind of schedules. Mm-hmm. And my 9-year-old is autistic and has, you know, a lot of supports that she needs emotionally and physically. And those are not provided to her. And her dad does not believe that she's autistic. So there's a lot of struggle in that. And I, for the past, I would say the first 2 years of trying to navigate this post separation, divorce, all of that, I kept trying to force him to co-parent and like initiating conversations and coming to him with trying to have discussions and like, hey, can we get on the same page and try to get him to go to therapy with us and all of that. And really came to a point, I'd say in the last 6 months, where I've had to just recognize that he's not able to meet me in that space. Mm-hmm. And it's just causing more frustration for me and the kids. And so mm-hmm. I've had to step back and just allow the parallel parenting mm-hmm. and hope that someday we'll be able to come back to a space of co-parenting, but knowing that may not be possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you talked about resentment, what did you mean that you said you were resentful a few times in that interview? What are you resentful about?
Resentful towards him? I'm trying to remember.
I didn't know. You said you wanted to let go of resentment.
You know, the resentment I think I have towards the situation is really around feeling frustrated and resentful towards him for not having the same kind of self-awareness and putting the kids first. And having to really let go of my expectations and that resentment and meet him where he's at. Because in my resentment, I was having these high expectations that he couldn't meet. And that was causing me to resent him. And my resentment of him, he was feeling it. So then he reacts to it because he views me as being this like overprotective nagging parent mm-hmm. when really I am a nurturing parent who's providing the kind of parenting that he wasn't given as a child, but mm-hmm. he doesn't see it that way. He sees me as overbearing, overprotective and nagging. And so when I started responding to him versus reacting out of that resentment and let the resentment go, our interactions have shifted where now we can talk about scheduling. We can talk about some bare minimum things for the kids without mm-hmm. every interaction being a conflict. Mm-hmm. And so when I let go of my resentment towards him and just acknowledge like, this is who he is. This is mm-hmm. how he's able to show up. And I can't keep pushing him to do more than what he can do. Mm-hmm. That's when it gave me peace. Like, we're not co-parenting the way I want to, but at least for me, I have more peace around it mm-hmm. because I know what to expect. Does that make sense?
Yeah. 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 I too was resentful about a piece of our marriage, very resentful towards him, very angry, and would bring it up a lot and would sort of held on to that in the beginning as like, well, I know I did this thing. I know I'm like turning your life upside down, but you know, and I'd go into my place and it felt really bad. It just did not feel good. But also I didn't feel like he was taking ownership of, it was very easy to blame me because it was just easy to blame me because I was, you know, the one, but he wasn't taking ownership in marriage. I think I won't speak for him, but for me, when I realized my part and what I was doing with that cycle between he and I, like I just was able to let it go and things got so much easier. So, and you can cut this out if you want to, but I just have one more question. Like, I'm very curious what you think your part was in the,
we're not cutting anything out either.
Okay. We never cut anything out.
Okay. Yeah. And I'll get to you, Michelle. Don't worry. Don't you worry. Oh, I have thoughts, Michelle. What was your part?
So I think for me, my part was, I think I'm still exploring that a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think the place I've come to is recognizing that my part has been, my resentment has been twofold. My resentment has been him not showing up how I want him to show up mm-hmm. for our kids, for our parenting relationship. But then also I was being cheated on the entire relationship, like mm-hmm. chronic cheating. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my resentment was around that and around a lack of action behind his words, where I was being told the entire relationship, you're my soulmate. I knew that from the moment we met, you're my soulmate, mm-hmm. but then mm-hmm. wasn't showing up in that way. Mm-hmm. And so I guess actually the resentment is kind of like three threefold. And the part I recognize for myself, my part in it is I knew very quickly who he was as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't walk away at that point. I didn't mm-hmm. let it go at that point. I ignored all the red flags. I listened to the words instead of observing the actions.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the resentment is actually rooted like towards myself mm-hmm. because I accepted that behavior and I allowed yeah. that behavior for because so
we're, well,
long.
Because on your healing journey where you were, you met him just where you were. You didn't, I mean, you don't know what you know until you know it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I know you well enough. Like, I know you give yourself grace with a lot of that now.
And, oh, yeah. Yeah. And I looking back, I can see like my part in all of it was that I had this vision of how I thought relationships should be. And I had this vision of how I thought parenting should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, because of his words, that we were on the same page, but his actions completely proved time and time again between mm-hmm. relationship and parenting that we were not on the same page at all. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the same values. We didn't have the same vision. We didn't have a shared language even about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look back and I see that my part is that I was very stubbornly trying to constantly change him and make him show up how I wanted him to, and not just seeing him for who he was and saying, this doesn't work for me, and walking away. I kept
mad at yourself. Mad at yourself.
Yeah.
Which is
so
really
letting go of that has been letting go of that and recognizing that has brought me a lot of peace because it's allowed me to accept that he is who he is,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to show up how he has consistently proven he's going to show up,
mm-hmm.
and I can't continue pushing and fighting him to be anything other than who he is.
Yeah.
And I have to meet him in that space. And things started to shift when I did that because now we don't have a great co-parenting relationship. The one that I would like us to have where we can do family things together for the kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we literally live half a mile away from each other. And
But it's peaceful.
There's so many ways we could be co-parenting, but at least that there's peace right now.
It's peaceful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is the most important thing. The conflict for me is the, and I heard Michelle, you say that you and your daughter's mom, do you say daughter? You said she, but
yeah,
your
my
child's
daughter.
Mom.
Yeah.
that you guys get along really well and you co-parent really well. And I think there's things that are really hard about that, like being really, really, being really close and and there's things hard about not being, but it's the conflict is the one that I get. Okay. This is like, I don't understand how we're supposed to, there's no like guideline for divorcing, right? So
there's no manual.
It's the strangest relationship that nobody understands unless you've experienced it, because it's this person that, you know, better than, you know, for better or for worse, you know, this person very intimately, you know, this person, their faults, their great things.
You've been through a lot of seasons with that person.
A lot of stuff, right? A lot of stuff with that person, deaths, family stuff, growing up. I mean, we grew up together at the same time. So going from that to then, you know, like unhappy to then the decision to divorce, there's no process for going from the decision to divorce. Like people just, you know, I want to be friends, which of course you want to be friends. You that makes a lot of sense to me, but there's no way to get from there to this peaceful place without, at least in my belief, some kind of transition period. And that's what I really try to help people with, because I don't even know if people think it's possible. Like, I don't think people think it's possible to do, well, I'll just say this and then we'll jump back into all three of us. I think that there needs to be like a celebration of divorce or ritual around it.
Hmm. So, I think it's fascinating that when you tell somebody that you got divorced or that you're, they immediately want to say sorry.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I think that right there is where the social constructs need to just crumble. And instead of that, and your friend or an acquaintance or a work colleague says they got divorced, say, how did that affect you?
How are you doing? That's a lot.
How are you doing? Right. Yes. Instead of just going into the, because it's such a moment where you're like, I'm sorry. And I go, don't be like,
well, that's how I felt. That is how I felt after my mom died. People, yeah. I'm so sorry. I cannot imagine losing my mom. You must be just devastated. You must be.
Well, because we.
How do you respond with like, no, I'm, you know, she made my life a living hell, even though she did her very best and she tried her best, but you don't, it made me feel guilty. My sisters and I talked about that a lot when people said they're sorry. Every time it was like this, you know, dagger.
Well, it's fascinating to me. And this is maybe just an American thing because I haven't lived abroad or have a lot of friends from a lot of different countries or religions, mm-hmm. like, you know, those international types of things. But here in America, when we're confronted with grief, bad, you know, like sad, deep things mm-hmm. that happen within us, we immediately want to apologize or say, you know, or do that as opposed to just being curious about, oh my God, well, what was your relationship like? Or, you know, just start asking questions because when we're going through the grief and we mourn our marriages, you know, in a very unique way as we mourn the relationships with the people who are passing, because not everybody, like you just said, you didn't have a great relationship with your mom. My mom and I I'm very grateful that I have a deep relationship with all of my parents, you know, mm-hmm. and it took effort and time, but it only happens when it's two people. Like my mom and I made a very conscious decision to become close when I was in my 30s. Mm-hmm. It was after, I've been in two relationships, profound. One was an 8-year relationship. And after that relationship, my mom and I then had some really good come to Jesus, you know, connection and talk. And it was just before I had met Carrie. And then I had the 18-year relationship. So I haven't been even single and dating since I was 24. And I'm, you know, in my mid 50s now. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very, very different time when you are intentionally trying to create the life that you so know and want. And it hurts to tell somebody that bandaging up those old wounds and those triggers it. And neither of you really want to go into the deep work. So at the end of my relationship with Carrie, we were able to really just take a space of just saying sorry for how we both showed up in it, and take responsibility that we didn't need to rehash everything. That wasn't what was important.
Yes.
The thing for me within the co-parenting piece that was super important for like the core is to break the generational disappointment that my mom and my father had going through their divorce and how toxic and sad. And, mm-hmm. and it was on one of the podcasts that we did that I shared this recently, because in January, my mom was in the hospital for a weird vertigo thing. And I went into LA to hang out with her, and we were on the couch watching Notting Hill. And we basically were talking about, why, cause she was saying something like, oh, I texted Carrie. And I said, oh, that was nice. What did you text her about? Oh, for taking care of Cooper while you're here with me. And I was just like, Mom, that's very sweet. You know, that's really cool of you to do that. And I really appreciate how, you know, we're all family still in that aspect. But with my mom in that moment, I was able to share with her. I said, Mom, this is not for you to get defensive. Mm-hmm. I just want to tell you the reason why Carrie and I are such great co-parenting partners is that I intentionally made the choice to not, you know, repeat what you and Dad did. And she was starting to get a little bit defensive. Yeah. And I said, Mom, I'm purely sharing this from 11-year-old Michelle. Mm-hmm. 9-year-old Michelle.
Mm-hmm. That's how old I was.
Watching your parents, this has nothing to do with 55-year-old Michelle. and how, you know, but it has an effect in the sense of, I know that's your truth, Mom. I know 100% that what you lived was like, I just validated her in a big way. And I'm sure it was rough and you had different ideas of what your life was going to be. And I was able to like really talk to her about that. But most importantly, it was really just to share with her the reason why was because of what they mirrored. And I did not want to mirror that for Kaden.
Yeah. Yeah. It, the generational, I love that phrase, you know, just shifting shifting the patterns. And we've got a lot of patterns in our, every family has a lot of, a lot of patterns, but like when your dad passed away, you know, you had, I'm assuming you had a, some kind of service or celebration or funeral or whatever, you know, your family calls it.
Memorial.
Yeah. And when, I went through one time, I made a list of like all the different life transitions. Cause I think divorce is a life transit, just a life transition. And every single one of them had some kind of, honoring, celebration, acknowledgement to it, except for divorce.
Yeah.
And that is, like when he and I first talked about it, I literally drew the first moment in that first conversation, I drew what I thought it could look like. I said, this does not have to be bad. This is what it could look like. I live here and you live here and here are partners and here's the school and we go to, and actually what I drew is what's happening, but,
you manifested it.
Yeah. I knew it was possible. And I'm really glad that I pushed against the, how, like you said, like how society sees it because it, people immediately think you have to pick a side. People immediately think you have to drop the other person's family. Now that you're ex family, or think you're supposed to be friends right away, or think there's just all kinds of, I think it's fear. I think because they fear out there and I would like to normalize it. And, you know, I help people bring some kind of closure to it because without the divorce isn't the closure. The closure is like making peace with the relationship. And I don't think that you can co-parent peacefully without getting to that place first.
Yeah, because you have to take, there has to be ownership or taking responsibility.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to respect her at this point. And so,
yeah, because you're no longer, you no longer can talk to each other like you talk to each other.
Right. I mean, there, and I don't want to. I mean, that's the nice thing.
I was a bitch. I was a bitch to him. I mean, I really know that's the part that I really owned. Like, oh my God, because I know I would never, ever talk to my wife how I talk to him on a daily fucking basis.
Yeah, I think, it's very true. I think, well, and also when we meet people and we're in new relationships, we meet them in different spaces, right? So you're never going to really treat anybody else like that relationship because hopefully you're a growth mindset human that cares about the trajectory of your life and you don't want to feel stuck and you don't want to just not care. And so when you take a breath and you have that beat, you know, I always say like, you just take a beat after therapy or after and after the divorce and you go into therapy and you start really, you know, working on that inner new dialogue, because the thing that I came out of it with, and I don't know if some of your clients do, but you come out of a divorce still thinking everything they said about you was true. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was just maybe how you showed up in that relationship, or maybe that was their own projection on you all those years because you didn't want to take the time to really connect on those deeper levels.
And oh,
you didn't choose. Yeah, you didn't choose each other to participate. So
No. He's incredible from what I can see. He's an incredible husband. Like And my wife and I say that all the time. We'll see them coming like on the soccer field, walking towards us and holding hands. And she'll look at me, she's like, they are really happy. Like they're
yeah.
really, you know, in our opinion, in our, yeah. I'd never like speaking to them, but you know, they're really happy. And that took, it, yeah, it took the, it, it took a shift, but so when my mom, just one more, my mom died real quick. When my mom died, my daughter who's 10 and a half now was, so I was 18, five, she was like four or five. Cameron, and I mean, all of our girls are incredible. Cameron's very, very in tune, very in tune to what's happening. So I actually found it on my watch. My mom died. Somebody had texted. It was just a bizarre situation. I didn't know if it was true. I didn't know if she'd committed suicide. I didn't know what was happening, but I went into like, we'd just come in from the pool. I have a baby and these two little kids. And I kind of went into a panic. 2 hours later, we are sitting around, their dad and I and the three girls, we're sitting in the family room. Cameron wanted to do, can we do something for NAMA? Can we do a ritual? She didn't call it a ritual, but can we do something? And I said, you know, I'm like, you know, sure, of course. So she goes to the kitchen and gets his help. She comes out with blueberries, pomegranate juice. She went and got a picture of NAMA. She got the tea set that she gave her and a couple other like a candle that they made together that was all melted and a couple things. And she set it up and we all, and candles, and we all sat around and she like held up a blueberry and she said, or the pomegranate juice. And she said, this is from the blood of our ancestors. And I went, oh Jesus, this girl's watching way too much TV. Like where the fuck is she getting
it.
This?
But, I love it so much.
Yeah. But, and then the blueberry, we all had to eat a blueberry in her name or something. Right.
Oh.
It was wacky, but it was exactly what I needed. Like a, you know, 4-year-old knew this. It was exactly what I needed.
She may be a little bit of a spiritual, you know.
She's a crystal. They're all, that's why we're so tired. They're all crystal children in some way. Yeah. But what if we did that? What if everyone came around the couple
back to the,
and they were deciding not to be a couple anymore?
Yeah.
And there was a meal train done for it. And there was a gathering and the couple, the parents said, this is how we'd like you to support us. And
yeah.
Why don't we do that?
Uncoupling. So I'm doing that. Conscious uncoupling. Well, you know, I really love that idea of people intentionally sitting through the hard together and saying, yeah, this sucks, but we know this is the right choice. And so let's move through it intentionally together. I love that. And so much of what you see and experience, I know in my experience, it was very much the minute I made the decision, we're getting divorced, everyone started taking sides. His family like completely shut me out. Mm-hmm. I became, you know, I'm the bitch who's divorcing their son. And they all like, they're like, you know, these people who for 8 years had told me that they loved me like a daughter and I was part of the family and I was there for births of nieces and nephews. And like, it was all of a sudden, no, we're picking battle lines and we can't speak to you anymore. And you know, friends taking sides, like not my friends, my friends were all like, we think he's a great dude on his own, but like in the relationship, it's awful and we're happy for you. But like, we are going to still interact with him, you know, to support
you. Why do you think everybody chose sides?
You know, I will speak to his family and his friends. I think that it's a cultural thing. I think we have this like cultural narrative of when people are choosing to get divorced, it becomes a battleground. And I think specifically looking at like his family's dynamics, like, he was a child of divorce and that's exactly how it was. It was a battle.
Yeah.
He didn't
see, all we
he
know.
Saw his dad every other weekend and there was a lot of conflict between his parents and there was a lot of remarriages and not much healing. And, so they're literally acting out what they know and what they've been shown.
Yeah.
And I always felt frustrated about that. To this day, I still feel a little bit frustrated about being locked out by his family because in their family dynamic, all of the other exes are still included in the family. Like mm-hmm. my stepdaughter's mom goes to the camping trips and mm-hmm. all the events and all of that and hangs out with the mother-in-law, but I'm the only ex who's been locked out because I pushed at their family cycles and mm-hmm. how their family interacts and behaves and approaches things. And that was not, I was like, you're locked out. We don't like how you're challenging the way our family does things. And I had a sister-in-law who was married into the family tell me very early in the relationship when I had complained about some things in the family dynamics, tell me, you know what? I had those same complaints, but I realized that if you're going to be part of this family, you just have to let it go and do things how they do things. Otherwise, you're not part of the family. Mm. And so I knew when we were going to get divorced that I was probably going to be locked out mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I had the ability to be like, hey, guys, this is not cool and call it out. And when you are, you know, you can be the black sheep of someone else's family if you're married into the family. That was, that was my experience. And that's when the lines were drawn of it's a battle. You have to pick sides. Well,
my parents too, did not have a good divorce at all. They were both, my dad had just, he passed away in 2020 and he had spastic paraplegia. So he was in really bad physical shape, had just gone into a wheelchair full time. And my mom had been in psychiatric hospital. I mean, I think it was like a year at the time.
How do you feel now knowing you don't have parents living anymore? Is it a strange feeling?
My wife's name's Christy. We call ourselves orphans. Her mom lived with us. We moved her in with us. And then about 6 months after, we were going to build her a little house in our backyard, and she was going to live with us. 6 months later, she got really sick. And 6 months later, they diagnosed her with ALS and she died the next month. So we it was a very different experience than I had had with my other two parents. And then she's open about this. Her father committed suicide when she was 12. So we both have like family stuff, which has been great because, you know, it's good to support each other about it. But so it's weird, but it's good because I feel a responsibility to be the like you said, Michelle, the shifting the generational pattern. And I have a very, very small family. I only have two sisters. That's like it. That's it. Not even just in my immediate family, like my extended family. And I feel like I have to be a role model or responsible in some way. But I remember being 10, which is when my parents first separated or divorced, and at my grandparents' house, which we'd go to every Sunday, my dad's parents. And I still can, like, I can really feel it. Nobody said my mom's name. Nobody talked about her. It was like she was dead when I was there. And I knew not to talk about her too. Like
it's even worse than that because it feels like they've been extinguished.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like death. People don't bring up people for death, or they might, but you're just like, you know, it's more of a remembrance type of feeling, but
it always feels good. I feel like when people bring up a story about somebody that's died, to me, it feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw the same shift with my grandparents
mm-hmm.
not mentioning my mom.
Nope,
you know,
not at all. It's like this Italian loyalty, this Italian, you know,
Jewish.
Uh-huh. We're very similar, very similar.
Yep. Yeah,
and I was really very, very close to my grandpa, and I lost it one day. And I could see myself screaming at him in the kitchen. I'd never done this before, screaming at him saying, it's like, you never, you know, exactly what I just said. It's like, she's dead. You never talk about her. It affects kids so much to, you know, we're a part of
just not acknowledge.
Yeah. We're half of, if we have a mom and a dad, like I have a mom, bio mom, you know, mom and a dad, and an incredible stepdad for 17 years. But I'm a part of them. So for somebody to shut out one of my parents,
mm-hmm.
it's like, hey, I can call my mom a bitch, but if you do, I'll cut a bitch. Like nobody else can say it but me.
Uh-huh.
But it's hard for the kids, which is why I really try with people to you're not doing things because it's the, like the right thing to do. You're not doing things because it looks good to other people to be friends, whatever. You're kind and good to these people because they're your children's family.
Yep. I mean, yeah. That's the why. I mean, that's why River, you know, bites her tongue sometimes, because at the end of the day, it's about, is this going to provide value to my children in this?
Yeah.
And I think that's
something that my kids deal with all the time, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been one of my number one priority from the start that my children don't hear me speak poorly of their father.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's important to me that their relationship is not molded by my perspective of him.
Yep.
They get to form their own opinions about him as a person. And my daughter to this day will ask me, why did you and dad break up? Like, why doesn't grandma and grandpa talk to you? She'll say, can you text grandma about mm-hmm. something? And, you know, we've had conversations about how, you know, to this point, I'm like, I can't text your grandma because your grandma will not text me back. Your grandma has blocked my phone number. I can't talk to your grandma. Mm-hmm. And
what do you say? Like, how does that
bother my children? It bothers them deeply that the other half of their family has cut me out. Do things together as a family. And it's like, we'll go to a soccer game. Like last summer or 2 summers ago when my kids had soccer, and it's literally, I'll go to these games or I'll go to events, birthday events. Birthday is a great example. Actually, we had a joint birthday party last summer for my daughter, and I invited the other part of the family. I created it so that her dad could come and his friends could come and his family could come. And they came, but not a single one of them spoke to me during the party. Mm-hmm. And my daughter noticed it. And afterwards she was like, Mom, why did you invite them if they're so mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, because it's about you and it's important to you to have your dad there and the family there. And I just want to make that environment for everybody to be there together for you. That's what matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to observe and see how they're dealing with that already.
Yeah. Well, see how you said your daughter picked up on it. I mean, they pick up on everything. It's like, they may not hear, and this is not a knock on you, River, because this is every single kid and parent, right? They may not hear you say anything bad about your ex, but they feel it. It's my guess. Yeah. They feel it, right? And they, you know, they're not seeing their dad's family being mean to you, but they feel it. And
that's why when you talk about the kids and getting divorced and you making it a decision not to get divorced because of the kids, that's just the wrong viewing of it, because the kids are already feeling anxious and they already see the tension and they mm-hmm. see the flicker, they see the little snaps or the lack of energy that has just been withdrawn mm-hmm. and separate kind of lives in those you know, kind of months and years sort of leading up to it. And for people to say that they want to stay together, and we've talked about this on the podcast quite a bit, but I'm just a huge proponent of, your kids deserve to see both of you in your best and highest good.
Oh, yeah. So I'm the oldest of six kids, and my parents were married for 25 years. And my siblings and I, even when we were children, like teenagers, we would talk about how our parents would be happier if they weren't together.
Yeah. You knew.
We could see it. Oh,
at 9, I was sitting on the couch and I looked over at my parents were telling us that they were getting, and I went, thank God. That's what I said. And I remember just looking at my brother going, like, he was starting to cry. I am the oldest, I should say. And he was starting, I'm like, dude, don't worry. Like, it's all good. This is going to be way better.
But your parents, River, your parents were married 25 years and then divorced, or did somebody pass away and divorced?
No, my parents are married 25 years and then divorced, separated multiple times throughout my childhood. Mm-hmm. Then we get back together and then didn't get divorced until 25 because religious beliefs mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
it's the guilt.
My mother and I don't have a relationship. We haven't spoken in 18 years. Mm-hmm. And so for me, like speaking back to like observing my part in things, like I look back at my relationship and I was like, I stayed for a lot longer because that's kind of what I had modeled for me, that like, you stay and try to make things work. And then when I realize like I'm just done and my kids will be better off if we are living different lives. Yeah. My kids will be, and it did, like the minute I chose to get divorced and I moved out with my kids, it brought a new layer of peace, even in the midst of the struggle. They calmed down a little bit because they were feeling all of that, all of that strife, all of it.
Now, Julia, you guys have four parents basically in this whole parenting situation. My kid's going to therapy now just because we want her to have
to be a human.
Have tools. Yeah. Cause I have so many friends and some of them are later in lifers that never had done therapy until like this year, you know, or start to talk about it and understand having those tools. So I definitely want to give, I've been going to therapy since I was 11 off and on in my life. So I will always lean back into therapy, not necessarily talk therapy anymore, but some type of therapy with unique modalities and stuff.
Well, like this, this is like therapy.
It 100% is, which is why we freaking love it every, you know, week. And we feel grateful to have, you know, get to do this, these conversations. But one of the things that we're finding is obviously I'm a little more lenient in her eyes, in my ex's eyes, and she's stricter. And how do we sort of balance the two? But guess what? We have very different relationships with our kid.
Yeah.
In different dynamics. Guess what? I'm not a part of that anymore because we're not in the same, we can't be on, like, it's always going to ebb and flow and shift. And maybe next year I'm the horrible parent, you know, and now, you know, in Caden's eyes as a going, she'll be 13 in November, in September. Mm. So, you know, tween years, but I just parent from a conscious parenting space and a human design space because my kid is a projector. I'm a generator. Mm-hmm. I've had to learn how to parent, again, a generational pattern that I've like literally dumped. And I'm so proud of myself because the intentional and the conscious parenting piece, I get a different response out of her. I don't have to argue with her. I have figured out ways now that she has her phone in our hand quite a bit.
Yeah.
And they're social beings with their friends and they're FaceTiming and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I text her GIFs of what I need her to do. Mm-hmm. And if I walk into her room and knock on her door, she knows I want something from her at that moment. I try to break that also by knocking and going, peekaboo, do you want a snack? You know, just like little things so that this way, every time she hears a knock, it's not, I need to talk to you or you need to now. Be performative for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Yeah. So I text her funny things and she texts me funny things, but I've learned to text her gifts about brushing her teeth. Like it's time for bed and silly that she can like speaking their Gen Z, Gen Alpha. And it's really been making it nice. It doesn't make it hard. And it's so funny. It's just that Carrie is still parenting from her generational. And this is the way I was raised. And that doesn't work with these children these days.
Mm-hmm. But if they get to, and you get to support, they get to.
Totally.
I think the thing that's wonderful about parents that parent differently is they get to experience that good part about it and the struggle about it, right?
Yeah,
they get to experience both. I don't think either one is good or bad. It's just they experience both. So we do it pretty. We're pretty a lot. We're pretty much parent. Actually, we parent very much the same. I would say we got very, very lucky about that. The four of us did, but I feel like my job is always if they come with something that has to do with their other house, which we always call the street name. I'll just say Apple and Ridgecrest.
Right. So right.
That's where you're going to be because I think saying mom's house and dad's house, it's like, isn't it their house too? It's their house too. Right. Mm-hmm. Like that just doesn't, it never felt good to me. So I'd either say I'm taking you home or I'm taking you to Ridgecrest. But hold on, almost 45 year old moment. Just a second. It's going to come back. That my job is to just help them process something that maybe feels hard for them. I was just thinking of going to say something, but I don't think I'm going to say that. It's also hard to, like, I can't just go, I am a very open person. I will talk about any sexual, I'll tell you everything, but I can't, in this topic, I cannot tell you everything because it's in order to have a good relationship with them, I need to have a clear line where I don't go over there. Like,
yeah.
Don't speak about that publicly. I don't, I just don't do that. So it's kind of tricky in that way. One-on-one yeah. people or in group, you know, in my group work or whatever, I definitely yeah. share stories, but that's why the social media and things like this are hard for me because there's no way for me to be completely vulnerable because it could throw somebody under the bus. I don't know if you guys feel like that or not. And I did not tell you this, but I never end a session on time. That's why I have to do 90 minutes now. I will just keep talking with you until the cows come home. So you have to, don't worry about my time, but you have to wrap for your time. Okay.
No, I love this. This is such a great conversation. Just do a tea,
you know?
You know, yeah. I like kind of leads to one of my questions for you, because I had a couple of questions. You know, everything we've been talking about, you know, one of the big questions I hear from women who I'm working with when they're leaving relationships, they're having these difficult struggles with the person that they're, you know, exiting the relationship from, and the parenting is such a conflict, is, you know, is it possible for parents who parallel parent to shift into peaceful co-parenting someday? Is that possible? Or does it take, I guess looking at my own situation, I wonder that a lot too, of like, will we someday be able to have the kind of co-parenting relationship I'd like us to have? Or does that take a level of self-awareness from both people that makes it impossible if those two people aren't in that same space? So do you think, like, when you work with clients, do you see situations where maybe there's just there's parallel parenting and there's really toxic, you know, parenting cycles and inability to communicate and all of that? Is it possible for those situations to turn into peaceful co-parenting someday?
Mm-hmm. I think your point about, like, it takes two people that are pretty self-aware. That is true. I don't, I can't. I mean, I can try to help, but I can't work with somebody that is not self-reflective or owning their own stuff. It just doesn't work. but I think they can. I would probably ask them, like, what do you need to be able to peacefully co-parent with your kid's father, right? Like, what do you need to be able to do? Do you need to let go of something? Do you need to, ego is a huge, ego is one of my, I have like my, you know, my framework, my steps or whatever that I think are super important. And dropping your ego is a huge one because, if you think that the sun and the moon revolve, I'm just real direct. So I'm just going to say, if you think the sun and the moon revolves around you, like as a parent, that your child, that you are your child's everything, you're pretty much fucked. I'm just going to say that you're fucked because you are going to see other people loving your child and your child doing, like, right now, my kids are on vacation with their bonus mom's family or visiting family. I'm so happy for them because I know they're having a great time. They're there. But, like, I had to get comfortable with that. My kids have, like, family that's not my family. And my kids have experiences apart from me. And you know what? Now I can see that that's a great, great thing. But for a lot of people, when your identity has been mother, it's really hard. So I would probably say, I would ask that, like, what do you need to do?
I also think it has a lot to do with the age your kids are at this juncture too, because. Yeah,
tell me more about that.
Teenage, you know, as you get into the teenage, like, you know, River and I have kid, we, you know, we're like all parents here, but mm-hmm. I think when you have these littles, it's a very, it is, it's still your life. Like when they're 12, mm-hmm. they're like, okay, call me when it's time for dinner. Like mm-hmm. you're still very much alone in your place. Like if you don't have a partner like me, I'm single. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm like looking for her for hanging out with, and she's like nowhere to be found, you know, through the hours, almost up till bedtime, you know, where that's when we finally have our like connection and talking and dinner and like a little bit of that wind down, or bedtime snuggles, you know, which she still allows. So I'm mm-hmm. kind of happy about that. But I think
you experience judgment from people about the fact that you don't, and I'm curious about Michelle, just because it's two women and River, you know, man and woman, that's like the perception is different. So did you experience that kind of judgment from people that you were not caring for your child 100% of the time?
No, not one bit. I mean, we have 1 week on, 1 week off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it works really, really well, especially for Kaden. Like she gets to get into the groove with both of us, and she gets a full weekend with us, and no matter what happens through that week. So there's not a lot of like back and forth, like, you know, 3 day, like, I don't know how people do the two, three, like all that stuff.
Like, a long time.
Me, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm dyslexic. Like that would just drive me nuts. Like mm-hmm. I just, and we can plan, and you can plan things for yourself. Like mm-hmm. my ex is now with a man,
mm-hmm.
living with a man full time. Like she moved in. And he's very sweet and grew, you know, has three daughters that are grown. One is trans. And I think it's pretty cool that, like you said, I know she enjoys being over there. So I get joy from knowing that she's going to have a great week, even if I get one phone call every couple of months that's like, they're not getting along and they need.
You would get that from your under the same roof.
Exactly. So I think, I haven't had any kind of negative tone or feedback. Did I, in fact, want to be a part-time mother? No, mm-hmm. I didn't. Mm-hmm. So I stayed as long as I did because I just having that, I remember not this time, but because Carrie and I had a short separation back in 2018, for around 3 to 5 months. And I remember that very clearly because Kaden was probably then only, you know, around 9 or 8. And that
when you first separated?
That first Friday night. Yeah, we separated and then got back together for a few years. Mm-hmm. But that first initial little separation where we thought, you know, can we fix some things not under the same roof? Like it needed to had to be a big shift. And I just mm-hmm. remember very clearly that first weekend without her, I was just curled up in a fetal position for those first few times because it was my ego. It was everything, like the intention of saying I do, the intention of creating a family unit and being in partnership. And even if you're not happy all the time, ebb and flow, but you're like, okay, I'll just keep trying because it's for the kid, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I know you shouldn't stay together for your kid because that's just the wrong frame of mind. But it doesn't negate the fact that I did not sign up to be a part-time mom.
Yeah.
So when I have her, I really love sharing how much I'm happy to have her here and how she's very much enough and mm-hmm. breaking those generational curses with her and how she actually heals me in return in many ways also
mm-hmm.
Just through her being herself. So it can be the most beautiful and rewarding relationship and getting to parent without a backseat parent close by. It's been the most rewarding time of my life because I don't have someone in the back judging or saying that I'm doing it wrong or
all. You don't have your marriage stuff interfering with the child raising stuff.
No, exactly. And I just get to show up the way that I want to show up. And I get to have this really cool relationship with this freaking phenomenal little human being that chose us, you know, from, you know, and so I feel really lucky in that sense to have her as my child. Like, I feel so grateful.
The it's hard to describe that to people that aren't divorced, because I feel like if I said, like, I would never post a picture. Like, this is my wife and I, it's not our weekend, right? I mean, you know, I won't go into personal details, but we had a really great time last night, and just the two of us. And it is, we say it every single time, it's just the two of us. We are so fortunate that we get this time for ourselves.
That's I mean, the
as,
thing.
As a couple, but also just as individual people to rest and to, you know, by the time they're back with us.
You have time to fill your cups.
Yeah. But I don't think other people want to hear that. And I actually just come out and say it. I say, listen, I'm doing really good because I just had a weekend of myself, and I'm not going to lie, there's some perks. There's some perks.
River and I say this stuff all the time.
I talk about that all the time because so my parenting schedule is, you know, I have my kids Sunday evening through Thursday evening. So I am the primary weekday parent, doing all the school, the appointments and all the things and the extracurriculars. And then they're with their dad. He doesn't work on Fridays, so they get to have all day.
Every weekend with him? I've not heard that schedule, River. That's interesting. Interesting schedule.
The reason it got set up like that was because I was a stay-at-home parent for most of their lives. And he worked a job where, you know, he leaves at 6 o'clock in the morning. He doesn't get back until probably 6 or 7 o'clock at night, because he works, you know, 4 days, and then he has the weekend off. And so when we were getting divorced and I was moving out, my biggest goal was to try to make the transition as easy as possible for our kids. And I was already working on the weekends as a photographer. And so a lot of the times I would be gone on the weekend working, and they were already with their dads. So it just seemed like a natural flow to follow that kind of life pattern that we already had set up.
Just
move that into our parenting schedule. That's become a really frustrating thing for me. I love and appreciate my weekends to myself. I love it. But having 4 days with my kids and then 3 days with their dad, and then they come back, I drop off regulated kids to their dad on Thursday nights, and then I receive highly dysregulated kids on Sunday before school starts for the next week. So it's this constant up and down of having to regulate my children. And by the time I get them regulated, I don't get to then enjoy time with them in their regulated state. So that's become a huge frustration for me. But at the same time, I also really love my free time to myself, because I need it. Because so much time trying to help my kids, especially my neurodivergent child, regulate and move through the world, that by the time the weekend comes, I need that time to myself. And I have no shame about that whatsoever. There's Thursday nights where I'm like, thank God I get to drop them off tonight, because it was a rough week, and I just need some hours to myself.
Well, you've seen those memes that's like, everybody should have, every family should have a divorced parent schedule, or so, you know, something like that. Or
I get more time to myself now as a divorced parent than I did when I was married. Because even when I was having free time to myself on the weekends, I was working.
I mean,
I was still the full-time parent, and now it's forced the other parent to actually parent and be with the kid, and I get time to myself.
I think it's really important. I don't think enough divorced, if they're just about to get divorced, especially women, we've talked about this before, and there is such a pressure on moms to be the end all be all of everything. And there is a real burnout rate to moms. And so after the divorce, all of a sudden it's like, do, 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 do. And then the brakes are just put on, because now the kids are at their other parents' house. And now you're looking around. So I mean, it's, for me, it, what was really helpful was creating a not parenting schedule for myself. And that really came down to, On Friday, when Caden goes off on Saturday morning, I clean like her space, wherever like needs to be. I start her laundry. I knock out all that stuff. So I can really just almost have, you know, enjoy my space and knowing that those chores are done. And it kind of allows a transition moment for me because I'm making her bed and I'm maybe changing her sheets and I'm still reminding myself, I'm still a mom, right? Like I'm still
a mom. I do. When I remember, I do their laundry when they're not here.
Me too. I mean, I do. So I do all that. It's like things like the mom stuff doesn't stop. But then also in the beginning, I really tried to create community, and building community is so important in this newfound structure, whether you're coming out later in life, whether you're coming out of a two mom family and you're gay and you just don't have a lot of new friends who might be single also, and building that sort of friendship community with other, hopefully other moms. I think that's one thing I've really valued about the later in life group is that they're along in their life and also moms. So we have a lot in common and there's a lot of things we can talk about, but mainly it's not making excuses because we have kids or what, like we don't like that conversation.
It's intentional. It has to be very intentional to,
it is,
to
exactly.
do that reach out. Yeah.
And creating a community around where your kid gets to meet that those new friends as well, because it's important to showcase and model that just because the marriage is over doesn't mean that I stop living as a woman, as a human, as a breathing, you know, person. And I would say
for Caden to see that.
She loves it.
For Caden to see that, and she's not going to be able to like articulate it right now, but it's why I tell people like, don't ask about their weekend or their time at the other parent's house. Just don't ask, because asking it like invites this. It depends on the tone. And if like right now they're like a wedding celebration. Oh my gosh, how was her baby's wedding? Did you see? Oh, you saw that cousin? I saw a picture. A lot of the times, I'll just say what they send.
I just say very generally, like, did you have a good week at mom's?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, did you have a good week with mommy and you know Scott or whatever? And she'll just say, yeah, I did. And I'm like, fantastic.
Yeah, I ask about the thing that excites them. I'm like, oh, did you get to go swimming on Friday? Because I know that every Friday night they usually go swimming. And it's like, oh, did you go swimming this week? They're like, oh, no, it was closed this week. And I'm like, oh, that's a bummer. I'm sorry. You know, like, things like that, the things that excite them.
The tone. Oh. Yeah, our text chain is called, we have Modern Family. So if they send one, like I'll say like, oh, I saw in the kids, I saw a Modern Family that you da 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 da. And I just say, how cool that you da 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 da. Because my feeling is anything that makes it seem like I'm questioning what happens over there.
Or like a spy effect. Uh-huh. Like, I do not want there.
Mm-hmm. Or that I'm missing something. Like they had an experience and I'm missing out because I wasn't there. I just because that's what I remember as a kid. Yeah. I remember that as a kid.
Something I've had to, this just reminds me, something I've had to work on is, really specifically not asking my kids questions about the weekend with their parents. Because what started happening for me was that, and I'll just preface this with my children.
Remind me your kids' ages. Remind me. Nine and five.
They are turning 9 and 5.
Okay.
And there's a lot of issues around safety for my kids with the other parent using substances, and there are safety concerns, and we've had some issues with that. So in the past, I would ask.
I'm sure that they could say that about us here too, because we are California sober, as I like to say.
But in the past, you know, like I would ask questions, or my children would tell me things, and then I would address it with the other parent because it was a concern or a violation of boundaries we had set, violation of the parenting plan. And what started happening was that if my children shared things with me and I spoke about it with the other parent out of concern for their safety, my kids would get in trouble when they went home the next week.
Sure.
Kids started feeling unsafe to tell me things because it led to them getting in trouble.
Give me an
example. So I had to recognize that the things that my children were telling me were a trigger for me, and I had to just create space for them to share if they wanted to share and leave it at that and have a conversation, especially with my daughter, like, anything that you share with me that you feel like you want to tell me is up to you. I promise you, this is a safe space and it's not going to leave the space. I'm not going to talk to your dad about these things anymore. Even if it's something that concerns me, I'm just going to keep it to myself because I want you to be able to trust me to share what you're concerned about. And so that made her feel a lot better because she comes home and wants to share information with me because she likes to talk things through when she's had an emotional experience. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard for me because I hear a lot of things that are triggering for me around their safety and emotions. And my instinct is to be like, I want to text him and be like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. But yeah. I can't do that because the violation of trust with my child.
I have a suggestion, but Michelle, you go.
I was just going to say, I feel, you know, the only time I really ask Kaden anything specific is we're really good about texting each other fun, like when we're doing fun things with Kaden, like, especially if it's a one-on-one type of thing, if she's taken her to the arcade and it's something she thinks that it would be fun for me to see that they're doing. And then that's the only offer that I really, you know, like, hey, did you have fun at the arcade with mom? Cause she sent me that a funny photo of you guys doing our little, you know, roller coaster thing or like, oh, I saw you went out for sushi. Was it delicious? You know, things like that. Cause Carrie specifically will, like, I take a picture. I say, I'm going to send this to mommy. So she knows, it's those kinds of things.
Well, and just to this one topic, it's also just because I want to try to protect them as much as possible from this constant back, like, cause in their life, they're just one day after the next day after the next day, right? They're not thinking about it in terms of back and forth and back and forth. Now they have transition times. Like when they come here, it's gotten better in 5 years, but there was always this transition period. Everybody was sort of settling into it, but I don't want them to have to bounce back and forth because that's another reason. It's not always just because of the other parent, but River, I had a unsolicited suggestion.
I love suggestions.
Yeah. Okay. You were saying it'll see again. It's kind of, my eyesight went at 40, my hearing went at 40, and now the brain is going close to 45. You were worried about safety and talking to your kids. Oh, that was it. Sorry. Can you keep that promise that you won't talk about it? She says?
Yeah.
Okay, but you really can't. Okay, I'll just say it. You really can't. You cannot keep that promise. If she came, I mean, I'm totally exaggerating. If she came to this and said, hey, I found dad's machete and I, you know, or found his machine gun or something, right? There mm-hmm. has to be, you really can't say anything she comes to.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you can say, I want you to know that anything that you come to me and say, I am going to support you and we will figure it out. We will talk to dad if we need to. We will talk to we will figure it out. Yeah. I'm not going to just, you know, whatever is repeated is for so that things can feel better for you.
Yeah, I love that. And I have had times where I'm like, hey, you know, what you just shared is a concern for me. And it is something I may need to talk with your dad about.
Perfect.
Because it's a concern. And she acknowledges.
She's not old enough to do that herself, right? Like Kaden is starting to get to that point where Michelle, you can maybe like encourage or support a conversation that she can have with her mom.
Totally.
But yours are
9 and 5
young for that. So you have to support it. My youngest was, when I told him and we separated, was 14 months old.
Wow.
14 months old. It was, my 40th birthday. I'm holding her. We're at the soccer field. I think it was the 4-year-old or 7-year-old. Somebody had soccer and the school community had just found out. It's very private, you know, Dallas school. And I'm holding her and he's there. And it was like maybe the first couple of weeks. So it's pretty tense. And none of the moms who I used to talk to all the time, None of the moms would talk to me, would look at me, would acknowledge me. They all knew mm-hmm. They knew it was my 40th birthday. Something happened. They knew. It was like I was like, you know, Scarlet A. And that's the, I kind of made a loop back, but that is the shame for parents, especially for women, for mothers, on like, we are doing something like existentially wrong by not being with our kids all the time. Like I had a friend, a very close friend, say to somebody with me right there, she's like kind of making a joke, but she said, oh yeah, she left her husband and kids for a woman. And that was probably the most hurtful thing somebody said to me. And there were a lot of hurtful things that people said to me, because that one, I was like, no. I very emotional thing, but I did not go anywhere. I did not go anywhere. I was more present. I was more kind to him. I was more helpful. It was like, I did not.
You were more yourself.
I was more myself.
Moments.
I was more myself
than ever before. They should ding you for the 14, 10 years prior to that, where
yes,
we hired ourselves. Like,
we looked better. You know, we looked good. Everything looked fine
from the outside.
Football coach and babies, and uh-huh. You know, everything looked fine. But it wasn't. It's kind of why I don't really share things on Facebook, because I shared things, not that everybody isn't like this, but I shared things wanting it to be fine. Mm-hmm. Now things feel really good and I feel kind of protective of it. Like if I put it out there, it's going to make it less real or something. But
talk about the fear of divorce. Like, why don't people move through it, because like with mom guilt and fear? Mm-hmm. How do you talk to your clients about that when they're just literally stuck in fear?
It's hard. It's different for different reasons. How they, you know, like River, you're saying, some of it is religious with your ex's family. It could be religious. It could be, they feel like this is their identity, and the fear of what would I do not having, you know, my child with me all the time. I think the most destructive, one of the major steps is letting go of guilt, because guilt, I mean, my guilt was so horrible for me. Like, I made bad decisions based on my guilt. Mm-hmm. My guilt affected my children. Mm-hmm. Like I had to let go of any kind of, and I still work on it all the time. I really still work on it all the time, but the guilt of divorcing, the guilt of making that decision, it would have only kept me in this place. And then that's because of society. The guilt is because of society. I mean, it just is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's my own feeling, but it's what we are. It's the, like we talked about in the beginning, it's the only thing we know and see, you know, when people would say, why didn't you know? Like, I thought people were born this way. And why didn't you know? I wanted to be a mom. That was my thing. I used to say, you know, teacher, ballerina, people say kids when they're little, and mine was mom.
Yeah.
And I did not meet another gay person until I went to college, went to Gonzaga, which is a Catholic college. Did not meet another gay person, outwardly gay. I knew all the teachers I had growing up at my Catholic school that were gay, because nobody talked about it. You were not allowed to talk about it. They were not allowed to be out. Mm-hmm. So if there's shame around that, and shame around, and nobody was divorced then, this is like the 80s. So much shame. I feel like I only had one path. So I took the path. The path was, that feels bad, and this is what you're supposed to do. And nobody told me what things were supposed to feel like. I mean, nobody told me, like, I don't know, like how, one of my friends, the moment I knew that we were, something was heading in a direction, and this is before I met my wife, I was at brunch with a friend well, there's four of us. And my dear friend, Amy, said that her husband was her sexual soulmate.
Wow.
And I just about spit up whatever I was eating. I was like, what? I couldn't even wrap my brain around that concept. Couldn't even wrap my brain around it. Now I can, but that, like, people just don't talk about that. It's just these assumptions of what we're supposed to do. So I try to have all those. I try to have a lot of conversations with our kids about a lot of crazy things, like connecting vibrators as a personal defense weapon. And we have, like, you know, all kinds of chats, because I want them to experience, I, you know, to experience all the things. Did that, I don't know if that, I've kind of, I don't know if that answered your question, but there's so much on this. There's so,
I know.
Well, so you, many layers.
I'm thinking, like, we have to have her back on the podcast, don't you think? Oh, yeah. Like, this is such a great conversation.
Yeah. What's your guys's, the goal? You kind of said it in the beginning, but your goal is to be just completely transparent and vulnerable and share that with other people.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point, is that we want people to live in their authentic truth, walk that walk, feel supported, feel seen, not feel so alone. The intention really is to help women thrive, whether they want to just try a new solo adventure, that they hear a podcast from us and talk about, you know, River's trip or one of my road trips that I take and go soloing with. We talked to this wonderful woman named Gila, who's just beautifully poetic, and how she describes her solo adventuring and what she's been doing. And I think it's just being a bridge. For me, I love building, building relationships, connections, fortifying truth, you know, just, I think just trying to normalize these conversations. I don't think I've ever had as much conversation within my core group, like talking to my friends around sex and at our different age and, you know, who trims what and how they trim and, like, and just normalizing some of these things and allowing that safe space with even just our, my deepest friendships. And so the podcast is just an extension of all that for us, you know, giving people a glimpse into my friendship with River and how we talk, because if we weren't recording this right now, we'd all, and then the three of us were on the phone, it w- I would think, God, it's such a shame that no one got to hear some of these golden nuggets we shared today.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, like, so, for me, having journeyed through so much in my life and feeling alone in so many of those times, I feel like, I mean, I have clients, coaching clients who listen to our podcast. I have friends who listen to our podcast. I have people who come out of the woodworks and tell me, this episode that you guys shared was so valuable to me because I didn't realize I wasn't the only one experiencing this. Mm-hmm. And you also made connections to tools that could help me through this. And so I think sometimes as humans, we really need to know we're not fucking alone on this journey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my therapist even listened and said, God, you guys did such a great job, you know, like dissecting that. So, I mean,
that's, well, that's like the best compliment. That's the best compliment. Well, I want to thank you because I too love conversations like this. But I do not love, and I'm not fully comfortable putting things out about myself on social media. I've you know, internalized homophobia, still some shame. It's really uncomfortable for me, yet I know how much I've learned from podcasts like this and talking with other people. Like, I hear somebody be vulnerable and I think, oh my God, that was everything to hear that. That was like the Lesbian Chronicles. Like, I love those two. And Allie, you know, they were like my main support system because there really wasn't anything else then other than them and Glennon.
True.
That was it. But I so appreciate now them putting all that out there because it's difficult. I just say that it's difficult for me. It's really difficult for me. So the fact that you're doing it, I'm trying to get braver.
Good.
I'm trying to get braver about, you know, everyone's going to have their judgments and everyone's going to have their own feelings, but it's so important for other people. So I just want to say thank you. It really is not a small thing to do to
Thank you. Our whole thing is really about adding value, and that goes from a place of who we're dating, you know, who we might bring into the fold. I don't know if you have followed the lesbian curiosity coach, Samantha.
Oh, Popper. Samantha. Yeah.
So Sam and I become great friends, and
she's so wonderful.
And so we saw this post, and she mentioned, like, who's your front row? Who are the people in your front row? And in order to have a front row, you have to get vulnerable. Yeah. You have to say to your friends, I'm okay at holding space for you. And what's creating expectations around friendships, because I notice when someone says to me, hey, let's be friends, I think of it in the way that I intentionally leap into my friendships and how I show up for my friends. But that's not the case. Not everybody will show up in the same way. So it's really important when someone says, hey, I really want to be friends with you, say, what does that look like for you? Because one call once a month might be for them like a lot. You know what I mean? Depending on who they are, how they grew up, all those, you know, things that are popping off. And
yeah, like I need like a year, like a solid year. Like, don't even go there about inner circle until it's been a year.
Yeah.
Because I get just weird about, I don't want them to think I'm needy.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't want somebody needy. So I play it real cool. I tell girlfriends that, straight girlfriends, like, you gotta play hard to get.
Yeah.
You gotta play hard to get.
See, not in our group. Like, we show up, we're like, you're my friend forever. You know why? Because we go off of the energy. It's more of a soul connection. Yeah. And so we build off that soul connection. We're like, why are we in each other's lives? Let's figure this out together. Like, we all love going into the deep dive. Not everybody wants to show
up. Not everybody does. Well, and sometimes you can tell. I met a mom at gymnastics, and I was sitting next to the grandma, and the mom was next to her. And the grandma was very conservative, and I'm talking about my wife, and we were laughing, and we were totally connecting. Well, the woman next to her was, she was talking, and then she said her wife. And I'm like, you're gay? You have a wife? What? You live in Texas? We need to exchange numbers. And I did. I didn't play that cool. I was like, we need each other.
Yes.
We need each other. So Renee, if she ever listens to this, we're going to get together for coffee.
It has to be friendships in adulthood. When you meet friends in your adult, because I have a ton of wonderful humans that I've known since I was 6, 13, high school years, college, whatever. But meeting other adults in adulthood, because life is hectic, because most of us typically have kids at this age, you have to be intentional about it. And if it doesn't jive, it doesn't jive. And you don't have to say something like, you know what, I'm just not feeling that. No, you just kind of let those people kind of quietly. There doesn't need to be.
But there's a confidence. I mean, you're both obviously very confident, right? So there has to be a confidence in that. Like when I asked, I said, we need to exchange numbers. I had no hesitations in it. I'm like, well, of course she's going to exchange numbers with me. Because we both, like, you know, there was like a feeling.
Totally.
Like back 5, 10 years ago, I was not confident in who I was. And I was not comfortable. I guess I wasn't comfortable putting myself out there. I really needed to sort of test it.
I met, like, I was not confident in myself in that way either. And I was literally at this campground, like, trying to hide so no one would talk to me, because I'm like solo traveling.
Well, it was my friend that owned the campground and another friend of mine that met us there. Yeah. So I was meeting friends there, you know, and then Little River is just sitting over in a hammock by herself.
So I'm like trying to read my book and like be all, you know, inconspicuous. I don't want to talk to anybody. And then Michelle just comes over and like forces me to talk. And 2 hours later, we're like best friends.
that's the confidence. I love that. And we need these friendships so much. Some of mine have only grown like from college and growing up stronger. I lost my best friend of 20 years because for both of us, things happened and it was too much after I came out, and it just is what it is. We saw each other at a reunion. We stayed at the same house with our roommates. I still love her, but there's a grieving period to this, like, grieving period to growing up. Some things are hard.
But again, I don't think you should be afraid to, even with those older friends, if you're missing them, if you're at a different space in your life and you feel like you have a little more energy and bandwidth to give to those, is to literally tell them, hey, I miss you. We're different people. Can we get to know each other again? I would love to revisit that friendship. It meant a lot to me back then.
We were best friends based on, I think, who I was then.
Totally. But you still have an opportunity to sometimes dip into that, or just really being heart open and letting new people in and say, like with the AZ Lilies here, the later in life, So I have a really beautiful community built, but two of the gals who recently within this month, funny enough, they were just like, every time we see, like they texted me separately and was like, Michelle, every time we hang out, I just always think like, I want to like do more stuff with you. And they literally said, can we be friends? And I said to them, well, what does friendship look like to you?
Yeah, it's a good question.
And so it's so fun because there's no right or wrong way to it. It's just setting those expectations.
Yeah.
And if you find that you're like really vibe, then that friendship organically grows because both people are enjoying that reciprocity. It's the same as dating.
It's the same as dating. And the last thing I'll say about that is that I think you have to have something that you feel that you can offer the person and that you don't need something from the person.
Exactly.
So I think if both of those things are yes, like, do I have something to offer this person? Yes. Do I need something from this person? No. Then I think it can just boom. You can just go into friendship.
And I'll give that, like, I'll meet them in that cadence. And if they can't do the cadence any longer, I'm okay to pull my energy back. And then
I get that. Like, you don't need any, like, we're just connecting without, there isn't that energy of needing something. And again, it's just through everybody sees it through the lens. Look at, I brought it right back to the lens. How they grew up, right? So this is just through the lens of how I grew up. But
Julia, will you come back again and be?
Yes, I would love to. I would love to be friends.
Yay! We would love to be friends with you. So
yeah,
thank you so much. Thank you so much, River.
Yes.
Did you have fun?
Oh yeah. I love this conversation. And it's like, I have so many more questions that we didn't even get to that I'm like, we need to do a whole nother episode.
That'll be fine. So.
Like, I had questions around like, what does co-parenting look like when you have a new partner come in and like all of those dynamics. So like, we need to do a whole nother episode.
I love that. Thank you for sharing everything.
Like, and I'm walking away from this, like, I feel like I got coached a little bit here and taking some little tidbits away from myself.
Yeah. Well, it's part of that. I don't want to just say the one way is no fun, you know, so I appreciate you both.
We appreciate how you showed up for us. So
yeah, I can't wait to do it again.
Anytime. I know. Have a great day, girl. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm so sad.
Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode today, be sure to subscribe and share, because what do we say, baby?
Sharing is caring.